Expert HR Weekly, compliance, good practice and benchmarking for UK HR professionals.
Hello and welcome to Expert HR Weekly with me, Jo Thirichalvam. The extent to which an employee can express their religious beliefs in the workplace continues to perplex employers, according to a recent survey by the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Employment Law Editor Ashok Kanani is here to tell us more. Hi Ashok.
Hello Jo.
So tell us about the two key findings of this survey.
Firstly, a concern from employers about providing the correct balance between an employee's right to religious freedom in the workplace and the rights of others to be free from discrimination. Secondly, a finding that employees felt that they couldn't express their religion in the workplace. In the light of this, I thought it would be useful to round up the key cases dealing with expression of religion in the workplace.
So to what extent can employees express their religion at work, for example, by wearing a cross or a hijab or some other symbol of their religion?
Well, employers should allow their employees to wear religious symbols at work, but there are circumstances in which they can insist employees don't wear religious symbols.
So tell us a bit about those circumstances then.
We can look at the key cases to provide some guidance about the circumstances. You might recall that not so long ago, there were two cases brought by employees who wanted to wear religious symbols at work, but they were disciplined by their employers for wearing the symbols against company policy.
Yeah, those were two quite high-profile cases, so remind us what they were.
The first was Ms. Awada against British Airways, and the second was Ms. Chaplin against Exeter and Devon NHS Foundation Trust.
Tell us first of all then about Ms. Awada's situation with British Airways.
In that case, Ms. Awada was a Christian and she wanted to wear her cross at work. British Airways had a staff uniform policy that prevented her from wearing the cross. She disobeyed the policy and wore the cross in any event. British Airways was not happy about this, and so she was disciplined. She was sent home without any pay. Ms. Awada reacted by bringing a complaint in the Employment Tribunal for indirect religious discrimination.
So indirect discrimination, just to remind our listeners, is where an employer applies a provision, criterion or practice, so in this case, this element of the uniform policy, and it applies equally to all employees, but it puts people of a particular protected characteristic, so Christians in this case, at a particular disadvantage. So what did the tribunal decide then in response to Ms. Awada's indirect religious discrimination claim?
The tribunal rejected her claim, as did the Employment Appeal Tribunal and the Court of Appeal. Ms. Awada, however, was determined to pursue the matter, and so she took her complaint to the European Court of Human Rights.
And so this is a process that actually took a number of years. What did the European Court of Human Rights ultimately decide?
Well, actually, given that the English courts, all the way to the Court of Appeal, rejected Ms. Awada's complaint, it was a real surprise when the European Court ruled that Ms. Awada did have the right to wear her cross at work.
And what was the court's rationale for upholding Ms. Awada's claim?
The court said that there has to be a fair balance between the employee's right to express their religion at work and the employer's right to have certain corporate objectives.
And what were BA's corporate objectives then that it was using to justify this policy in this case?
British Airways wanted to promote a certain corporate image, including promoting its brand and its staff, and the wearing of religious symbols didn't really fit in well with that objective. The European Court, however, found that those corporate objectives were not good enough to take away the employee's right to wear a cross at work.
That's interesting. You mentioned there were two cases. So the next case we're going to look at is Chaplin and Exeter and Devon NHS Foundation Trust. So tell us a bit about the facts in that case.
In this case, Ms. Chaplin was a nurse who was asked to remove her necklace and cross when she was on duty on the wards. Again, she refused to do so. The hospital, as a result, took somewhat of a drastic step of removing her from the wards and placing her into a desk-bound role. Ms. Chaplin wasn't happy about this, and so she also took her complaint of indirect religious discrimination to the Employment Tribunal.
And did she fare any better than Ms. Awada in the tribunal?
No, she didn't. the Employment Tribunal, the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and the Court of Appeal all rejected her claim of indirect religious discrimination. So Miss Chaplin followed in the footsteps of Miss Ueda and also took her complaint to the European Court of Human Rights.
And what did the European Court of Human Rights decide?
In this case, Miss Chaplin lost her case.
Okay, so that's interesting and surprising, actually, because why did Miss Chaplin fail where Miss Ueda had succeeded in what seems to be very, very similar circumstances?
Well, the hospital had a policy that banned staff from wearing necklaces, including religious symbols, on the wards for safety reasons, as opposed to for reasons of a corporate image. The necklace was seen by the hospital to be a risk to safety because it could, for example, get caught on something, or a patient might grab it, which in turn could lead to injury.
Okay, so the European Court felt that that objective was more appropriate to justify this policy than BA's corporate objectives of promoting a corporate image, etc. What guidance do you think employers can take away from the outcome of these two cases?
The key point is that employers shouldn't maintain a blanket ban on religious expression, which of course includes wearing religious symbols, such as the ones worn by Miss Ueda and Miss Chaplin. But, and quite importantly, employers should be aware that there are circumstances where a blanket ban can be justified, such as to protect health and safety, which we saw in the case of Miss Chaplin.
Moving on then to the other key finding that you mentioned in the survey, which is about employers still struggling about balancing this right of employees to express their religious views against the right of others not to be discriminated against. Because employers are still struggling with that, striking that balance, what kind of guidance do we have from case law on this issue?
On this topic, there are also two cases that I want to talk about. First is the case of Miss Liddell against Islington Borough Council, and the second is the case of Mr. McFarlane against his former employer, Relate Avon.
Let's look at Miss Liddell's case first. This is a case that also attracted a great deal of press attention. What were the facts in that case?
So Miss Liddell was a registrar with Islington Borough Council. After the Civil Partnership Act was introduced, she was required to officiate civil partnerships, but she didn't want to do so. She refused on the grounds that it was against her religious beliefs. The council wouldn't accept her refusal on religious grounds and moved to discipline her for misconduct, and actually also threatened to dismiss her. Miss Liddell reacted by launching her employment tribunal proceedings for indirect religious discrimination.
And what was the outcome in the employment tribunal?
Well, as with the other two cases we discussed earlier, her claims of indirect religious discrimination were rejected all the way to the Court of Appeal. And so she followed in the footsteps of the others and also took her complaint to the European Court of Human Rights.
Okay, so we find ourselves there once again. What did it decide in this instance?
The European Court of Human Rights also rejected her complaint of indirect religious discrimination. The court said that the council had acted within a fair margin when looking to strike a fair balance between the competing protected characteristics, that is, religion against sexual orientation. In this case, we had a conflict between an employee who wanted to express her religious views at work and the employer who didn't want service users to be discriminated against because of sexual orientation. So Miss Liddell's religious beliefs weren't sufficient to justify her refusal to officiate services between same-sex couples.
You also mentioned we were going to look at another case on this issue of balancing different protected characteristics. So, and this was a case of McFarlane and Relate. So tell us a bit about what happened in that case.
Mr. McFarlane was a Christian counsellor with Relate. His job role would have included providing counselling and psychosexual therapy to same-sex couples. He didn't want to provide psychosexual therapy to same-sex couples and refused to do so on the grounds of his religion.
So what was Relate's response then to Mr. McFarlane's stance of refusing to provide psychosexual counselling to same-sex couples?
Relate had an equal opportunities policy, which stated that its counselling and therapy services would be provided to all individuals, irrespective of their protected characteristics. In other words, same-sex couples would be provided with the service. Initially, Mr. McFarlane was prepared to counsel same-sex couples on non-sexual matters, but the conflict with his employer arose when he was required to counsel them on sexual matters as well, which he refused to do so.
Okay, so things were escalating and Mr. McFarlane was feeling stronger and stronger about this. So how did the employer respond to that continued refusal?
Mr. McFarlane's refusal was seen as a breach of the equality policy, and his employer took this very seriously. In fact, he was dismissed for misconduct. As a result, Mr. McFarlane also made a complaint of indirect religious discrimination and followed the well-trodden path of the Employment Tribunal, the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and the Court of Appeal.
And what did the Employment Tribunal make of his complaint for indirect religious discrimination?
He lost at the Employment Tribunal. Indeed, he lost all the way. And so he took his fight to the European Court of Human Rights.
So, and what was the outcome then in the European Court of Human Rights? This is the fourth case that has ended up there.
That's correct. He lost there too. The court took the view that Mr. McFarlane's employer, Relate, had acted within a margin that was fair when looking to strike the balance between Mr. McFarlane's right to religious freedom and the rights of Relate's clients not to be discriminated against.
So what do you think the key messages that employers can take away from these two cases? So both Ms. Liddell's case, which was obviously about officiating same-sex partnerships, and Mr. McFarlane's case, which was about, as you say, providing counselling to same-sex couples.
Mm. When dealing with situations that involve a conflict between protected characteristics, employers do have a certain margin of discretion. It's interesting to note that one of the comments made by the Employment Appeal Tribunal in the case of Mr. McFarlane was that where an employer's aims were to provide the full range of its services to all members of the community, regardless, for example, of their sexual orientation, the employer may properly insist on all staff carrying out those services. This is the case even if to do so would conflict with the employee's religious beliefs.
Okay, that's a very clear and concrete piece of advice to end on. Thanks very much, Ashok.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR Weekly, which you've been listening to with me, Jyothi Rachelvam. We're back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.
Expert HR Weekly, the latest from experthr.co.uk, the award-winning subscription service for HR professionals.